Hello, this is Jack Atkinson, and today, with Art at My Kitchen Table, I have Marvin Newman, a photographer, friend, and famous person that I was lucky enough to live in the same building with for a while. Anyway, say hello, Marvin.
Hi, Jack.
How are you doing?
Well.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, we're all new at technology to some degree, and so we had a little glitch here and there, but we're going fine now. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit of background about Marvin, and then I'm going to let him give his just 5 minute, or let's say 1 minute, presentation. So anyway, Marvin is a great photographer. I feel privileged knowing him, and he has worked for Life magazine, Look magazine, Sports Illustrated, done great photography, and now he's basically just a fine art photographer selling in great galleries around the world. So, Marvin, do you want to give a little more explanation of just, you know, how you represent yourself when you say I'm Marvin Newman?
Okay, my name is Marvin E. Newman. I usually use my middle initial, Jack.
Okay.
And I've worked most of my life in the magazine business, but also in the advertising business of photography. Today, after something like 25 years ago, I started, well, before that, let's go back right to school. Out of the box. So when I graduated from Brooklyn College with a degree in economics and a minor in what they call design, I went out to the Institute of Design, the new Bauhaus in Chicago. And I went to be a designer. That was my ambition at the time. And I got very deeply into photography. At that time, I belonged to a group just before I went out called the Photo League, and it was a group of photographers in New York that were trying to just bring up the social system as best they could, and it gave me a background of thinking I could really help society by becoming a photographer. That lasted just about as long as I couldn't get a job. So early on, I had also been an athlete in college, and I had expertise in a number of sports. And today, that expertise is overdone on pro football and so. But at that time, it didn't. I worked for a magazine called Sport Magazine. It was a monthly that went out to a lot of teenagers and college kids. And about 2 years after I had been working for them and I had become a staffer, Sports Illustrated in 1954 started to publish. And with the expertise I had, they hired me for quite a number of assignments, and I became a collaborator with Sports Illustrated. I was on the masthead for something like I'd say close to 15 years.
Wow.
And during that time, I became a recognized expert on photography. I have a statue.
what statue do you have?
From the Lucy.
Oh, really?
There was a Lucy Award, mm-hmm. and it was for my work in photography. And at that point, there was a point there where I'd always kept my hand in doing what I would call, or what's called today, gallery or art photography. And I had shows along the way that did show my work on that basis throughout the years that I worked for the magazines. But at one point, the magazines, I felt I couldn't do very much more with the magazine, and I always had the feeling that I really wanted to just do my own work, my own photography. I would give myself the assignment, you know, to do the pictures rather than have someone give it to me. And I went back because I had the credentials I had, having a master's of science in photography and other things. I walked back into the art gallery scene and was I was respected, and it was no problem for me to break in there. And today, I've had a number of galleries that represented me, but today I'm represented by Howie Greenberg, a leading gallery in New York City on 57th Street. And I've been with them about 5 years now, and I've had a number of one-man shows in New York, Paris, Amsterdam, and Germany. And I've just had a book done, a book of my own, of all the work that I've done over the years by Taschen. It's a collector's edition, and the critics were very kind to me. They thought it was great, and there was a headline on one of them: the photographer who's done it all. And it's been a good life, Jack. Yes. And right now, I had done. With this week, I had an email from my French gallery that represents me that we sold 6 photographs to the Cornevillais Museum of France in Paris, which is... it's a museum for the history of Paris, and the subject matter was on hidden cameras that I had used to photograph prostitutes in the street Saint-Denis. Mm. And it's been recognized in quite a number of places as being very, very special to the to that genre. Mm. And right now, I'm continuing with all the galleries and trying to do my what we have to call my art. And I print. I'm one of the few photographers that not only photographs but prints his own work. Mm. And the work that that's the work that's sold in the galleries. Mm-hmm. And. Yeah. Ask me a question, Jack.
All right. Well, I've got a lot of questions, but let's go back to what you just said about your passion book. Tell a little more about that. You said it's a huge book and very thick and kind of a collector's item in and of itself, not just a book, but an object. Can you tell me a little more about that book? I mean,
Well, they're not editions, but there were two different
printings of it.
Let's see. One was the book itself, and then the other was a book, the same book, and it had photograph mm-hmm. of my work, which was signed and dated, and between the two, it was to some collectors it was a bargain. mm-hmm. because the photograph under the auspices of the gallery might have gone for twice as much money as the edition that's in the book.
Yeah.
And again, you know the business, Jack. Sure. If you have an edition of if you have an edition of 10 photographs, or you have an edition of 300, and it works with etchings and so, the price difference is quite quite different.
Yes, and, I know that. Yeah.
The book consists of a lot of the work that I had done for some of the magazines, pieces mm-hmm. of it. But it's interesting in some ways, Jack, because most of the stories most of the chapters are, in a sense, related, and it has to do with the master's degree mm-hmm. that I did, and the thesis was the series form in still photography, mm-hmm. and it's the simplest way to describe it is that there are so many different ways to do that. Sometimes it's the same subject matter in a number of ways, and sometimes it's the graphics that are the same thing, or it's a set of photographs taken in the rain, or with the sun shining in a very specific way. And there were a number of other things that there were a few things that I always felt I was trying to do something very different in photography,
mm-hmm.
and I thought I could break new ground, something that other people didn't do. And the first one that came that I succeeded in doing that was a set of shadows. And
I love your shadows. They have certainly influenced me.
Yes, the shadows. I saw something on Michigan Avenue in late in the afternoon where the shadows were long, and if you did it the right way, which I finally figured out how to do, you could show the figures in shadow. I would say, I don't want to use the word cartoon, but it was a representation of the actuality, so that I added to it by turning the photographs upside down.
Right.
I took them one way and facing the people either coming at me or going, but then I turned them around.
Yeah.
And it was a full set of photographs that have been they've been shown all over the world. And
you shot those while you were in school?
Excuse me?
Did you shoot those as part of your thesis or after school?
Yes, it was part of the first group was part of my thesis, and then as I got deeper into it, I did a lot of things to accentuate what the problem was about. In the dark room, I manipulated the developing of the film,
mm-hmm.
and to add to the contrast. Today, that's done quite simply on the computer,
mm-hmm.
but at that time, it was. It was other people were doing it, but with different subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went on to do another one after I got out of school. There was another one that I decided that it could be quite interesting, where I photographed. I took line drawings where.
Oh, like your fence picture?
The pictures were taken with, I'm a loss for words, Jack.
High contrast.
That's it. There's the word. I've got it now. It was microfile.
Mm.
And it's the film that was used in all the libraries to tell you where the books were and what. And I developed a way of developing the film a little differently than they had done it. And what it was pure black and white. But the thing that was so different about it, I was creating by, even though it was just pure black and white, and the depth was really created by the size of the figures and the way they were photographed, rather than having grays and shadows going to give you third dimensional. They were third dimensional, but with a two dimensional cast. What did you do, Jack?
Well, I thought it would be better if I just wasn't there as a distraction. So, anyway.
You're not a distraction. I'm at your table and I'm talking to you. I think it's better the other way, Jack.
Okay, well, there I'm back.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm still being interviewed this
yes,
way.
Yes, no, we'll keep talking. Anyway, for the viewers, I mean, for the people listening, we're recording this on Zoom, and we do have photos up, and so I decided to block mine, and that's what that discussion was about. Anyway, so I have a question. Now, let's go back to school, and tell us about your instructors and how influential they were on you, and, you know, just how that whole thing came about.
Well, it started at Brooklyn College. I went there because I think I told you I was an athlete. And my grades really showed this. I was spending much more time running around the track than I should have. I should have been. I should have been studying a little bit more. But we had to make a decision about staying in school. And it was Brooklyn College is a city school, and you didn't pay tuition. You know, you had to go in by your by test, and when I had the problem where I had to pick up my grades, I had always had I had done a lot of sculpture, and in design and so, and I was talented. And so I went to take a sculpture course. But to take a sculpture course, which I did, you had to have prerequisites. So they got me doing, they had me taking designs in the history of art, mm-hmm. and all kinds of other art courses, so that I was able to take it. And just as luck would have it, there was a great, really quite a marvelous
changed
man.
Your life.
Yeah, it was a marvelous man called Burgoyne Dillo who was teaching this course, and I've told you before, he was a post Mondrian painter, but beyond that, he ran the WPA, the Works Progress Administration. He handled all the artists at one point when the Depression was at its height. But he became quite famous, as I keep saying, I told you so. At the Hirshhorn Museum, he has a whole floor of his paintings. After his death, he was recognized as being a great artist. And he suggested that I go to the Institute of Design to further my artistic development.
Well, I learned something today, and that's you went there thinking you were going into design, not photography. But yeah. You continued on the photography.
One of the courses I had to take to get to sculpture was photography. And again, I was I was very, very lucky to have the man who was teaching there was Walter Rosenblum, who was a recognized photographer, and today he's also recognized mm-hmm. as a great photographer.
Wow.
When I went out there, when I went out to Chicago, it was the same thing. You have to be lucky, even if you have the talent. And so,
yeah.
And my mentor was Harry Callahan, who is if you did the first 20 great photographers in the world, he became that.
And, oh, wow.
I did my master's, I did my all the courses that he taught under him, and the other photographer that was there that helped me with my thesis was Aaron Siskin.
Right.
And with those credentials, having studied with them, that introduction to the gallery art world was easy.
Yeah.
And the difference that we had is that so many of the people at that time that came out of school, and especially ID, the Institute of Design, became teachers. And so, but I took a different path. I went into the commercial field of earning a living and doing quite well at it.
Mm-hmm.
And but I never lost the feeling for doing artistic or art in my photography.
Well, I think we've talked about that before, and that so many of your sports photography was really an art piece more than a, you know, just an action shot. You know, that there's so many things you took that are just fabulously composed and interesting, and angles, and, you know, everything else that changes it from just being, you know, the action shot. Oh, and speaking of that, why don't we go into the greatest photo of the 20th century?
Yes, Sports Illustrated, which is, it was up until very recently when Time Incorporated sold it off, and so it still is the Bible of sports. And they recognize one of my photographs as being the best of the last century. And it's really what you're talking about. It was a photograph of the locker room at halftime. It took me a lot of, I had to talk my way into the Cotton Bowl, and also with the coaches that were there, because at halftime, and it's the biggest game that in their career that they're going to ever have, and to let me come in with my camera, but they trusted me. And what we have in the photograph, it's not just the photograph of football, but the whole team is sitting there, and you can read the faces. And that's something I've always tried to do. It's not just a two-dimensional image of a man or so of his head. It's what's behind it. And sometimes you can succeed in doing that. And that's one photograph that there's something like, well, the whole team is 20 people, but the coaches and even the trainers are all concentrating on what they're doing, and it takes it to a level that not many photographs can take you to. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the it's a classic, Jack.
Well, I certainly
the other classic is something a little different, but it's what I was pretty well known for. It had to do with the World Series, and it went down to the seventh game in Pittsburgh, and this man hit a home run. And this is where you have to say, when you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
I had framed it. I kept going back to the same place, mm-hmm. and I had the same frame. And I figured if they did something pretty interesting, that would be the picture for the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And well, he hit a home run with the tie score, and that home run won the game.
Wow.
It was Pittsburgh.
It was the World Series, right?
Yes, it was the World Series. But I went, but directly from there, I went to Iowa to a football game, and I got a call from the picture editor. He said, "Marvin, you've got a great picture." He said, "We're using it for a double page." And I said, "Well, I knew where I was. It was fine." He says, "Did you know that the ball was going over the left field fence?" And I said, "No." He says, "Well, it's in the picture." So that here's a man hitting a ball, and that was the shot that everybody knew about the World Series, that Mazeroski had hit a home run. But when you talk about luck, Jack.
Yeah, that was luck.
It was the decisive moment,
but you know, you have to have an innate feeling for the decisive moment. So.
And you have to be, there's a certain point here. You have to be ready to do that. And it's a question of putting in all the time of thinking, well, if you took this picture, it would be a great picture. But it became more than a great picture, mm-hmm. because of the just the fact that the ball was in the photograph over the fence. And
yeah.
But there are so many. There were when they sent me out, Jack, on these assignments. The reason I worked there so as long as I did is that there was no question about I would get them the picture that they wanted at the end. I remember coming back. They had their offices in the building that they own, the Time Life building on 6th mm-hmm. Avenue.
Yes, I'm familiar.
And I get off the elevator, and there's the managing editor who'd been watching the game on television, this game, not the one we just spoke about. This
yeah.
was another World Series.
Yeah.
And I get off the elevator and said, "You know, Marvin, I know what picture we want. Do you think you have it?" And I said, "I think I have it." It had to do with a man sliding home for the winning run. But you have to understand how tricky some of those things were. It's the Yankee Stadium. At that time, the World Series was played in September.
Mm-hmm.
And the lighting in the Yankee Stadium, half of the infield is in shadow in the innings, and half of it is in sunlight. So we had a camera there that had a shift on it, so that if you threw it one way, it would give you the correct opening for sunlight,
mm-hmm.
or the correct opening for shadows.
Oh.
And this guy hits this home run, and he comes running around the bases, and we didn't know if it was going to be a double or a home run, but there was at the plate, at home run, the home run plate, the catcher is waiting for the ball, and he's sliding in, and I'm screaming to the assistant, throw the switch, you know, and luckily he did, and we did get we had the picture.
Oh, fabulous.
But that was another world of mine.
Yeah.
Talking about that, we should talk about one thing, Jack. We should talk about my color photography.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people thought that I had broken really new ground in that whole part of the photographic spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the photographs, we've spoken about this, Jack. Mm-hmm. Some of the photographs at that point, museums didn't want to take color, simply mm-hmm. because there was very few color material that could hold up archival, you right. know, and that's now changed.
Yes.
And part of the gallery business that I'm in now is that they don't really care, Jack, about whether it's vintage color, but if your material, which mine has held up very, very well. I printed from Kodachrome 50 years ago, and the colors have been quite true. And some of the best things that I had done then, and it's the philosophy I've always had. It doesn't matter what the galleries are buying today or what the public wants. You have to satisfy your own artistic soul. And one day, Jack, they're going to catch up. But, you know, and it really is, it's
yeah.
true.
Yeah, they love the silver print and the Cibachrome print and instead of the artistic print.
Well, this was a set on the first one that I did was at Coney Island in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with that photo.
It's been a fantastic set for me, a great seller, and it showed all the things that I would say that was instilled in me by the teachers that I had, the kind of composition, the color, the balance, and you know, all is wrapped up in the technology that you know is now in our hands.
Yeah. So, but that one photo I'm familiar with is that yellow fronted shop on Coney Island with the photos while you wait, and it's so beautiful. The color is so dramatically striking. That yellow.
Well, you can it. It's talking about that there, you know, it's just bright sunlight. And so, but I think some of the more interesting creative things that I've done is there's a set on Wall Street through the canyons of the buildings, setting a certain beam of light just like they do on the stage, where they have a spotlight on someone and everything else goes out. And once I saw that, I tried very much to capture it, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And the color, because it's late in the afternoon, the orange, mm-hmm. you know, the orange cast that's there, and knowing that the buildings are surrounding the people, and you have this feeling that you know is. It's Wall Street, it's New York, mm-hmm. it's the buildings you have. It's to me, it's a great set of photographs. Well, and
is that in your new book? Is that in the book that you
It's in the book.
The Passion book?
They decided that Tashin wanted only the work I had done in America.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to be domestic.
But
along those same lines, John, one last thing was about really working with you speak about working with the light. But what kind of light is it and what does it do? We're talking about Coney Island, where it's full with the sunlight, very sharp, very, very special. In Wall Street, it was the same thing. It, during the winter when people really are in business and so on, all of them downtown, it has this, you set the mood of what you're seeing. And it's really, it's the color that does it mostly. And, a lot of people believe that photography, the only art photography is in black and white. And that's just not true. And along the same lines, I did an essay for Look magazine on a house of prostitution in Reno, Nevada. The women who worked there, they would try to make an atmosphere of romance. It was fantasy, there were reds and yellows and all kinds of things they think of. Candlelight is the best way to describe it. But when I did the story, I really made up my mind that I was going to actually capture this ambience that was set by the lights. And it's what I did. And it's so far away from the other things. It's technique, knowing what you're doing, Jack, and setting the stage of how you want to do it, and then trying to succeed if you can do it. So
okay, I have two last questions because we have a 40-minute limit on this.
Okay, go ahead, Jack.
And that is, I would love to hear something about your experience with Muhammad Ali. And also, I have just the last question is like what you would tell young art photographers, to keep in mind as they try and make a living. But let's start with Muhammad Ali. Just give a quick 2 cents worth of how that experience went.
Okay, Muhammad Ali, the first instance I had with him was at the Rome Olympics. He was not the heavyweight, he was a light heavyweight at that point, and he won the gold medal. And I didn't have an assignment, but I went with a girlfriend at the time, just to let her see what the Olympics were about. I had press passes and so, and we went to see it. And there's something about Muhammad Ali that you really won't see. You see it now, but at one point you never saw it. The first thing was that all the sportscasters, they're supposed to be quite brilliant, but I remember when he won the championship for his gold medal, the sports writers were saying, he never hit the guy, he didn't hit the guy. And I was looking at the same fight, and that's what I do. I try to get the split section, and I use split twice because the great French photographer
Bresson,
he speaks about the exact second and so on.
Yeah.
And in sports, that second can be broken down to 100 in 1 second. It can be broken down to 1,000 in 1 second. And it depends upon what you think. But a lot of people never had to deal with that. And I have. I think at that time, I could see inside a movement, just as you have 24 frames, I could pick out one of those frames that's the best one of the 24, even though they're so close together.
Yeah.
In any case, I saw it, and it always intrigued me that these people, who were experts, really couldn't see that, couldn't see some of the things that they should have been seeing. Mm-hmm. In any case, a few years later, when he was coming back and he was still he was champion of the world. I was in Miami doing another story, and I decided to go to see him. He was he worked at a gym called the Fifth Avenue Gym downtown Miami Beach, and he was so friendly and so kind. I remember there was Angelo Dundee was his trainer, and he had a son that was about 6 at the time. And I remember how kind he was to kids, and I saw him giving autographs, and he was just, he was very, very special. Mm. Beyond that, he had the best physique of any athlete I ever saw when he was at his peak. There was only one other. It was Jim Brown.
Wow.
Of the Cleveland of the Cleveland pro team.
Yeah.
And they really, I mean, I saw a lot of athletes, and it was just fantastic. Some of the pictures I took that day, really, I took portraits. I worked with the color. I did a lot of work, and they were all, we sold some just, it sells all the time. It's more than the photography. It's the person who's
sure.
in the photograph. As long as you do them justice, it'll be that way. What was your last question?
My last question is, now, what advice would you give to a beginning photographer, someone who's in their 20s, they've decided photography is going to be their art form, they don't know how they're going to survive, but what mindset should they have?
Okay. There's two or three things I would say. First, don't ever let anybody tell you you can't do it. Because that's what I went through. I came from a middle-class family. My dad was a baker. We owned a bakery. And it's just a question of, they wanted to make sure that whatever work you did, you got paid well enough to have a family. But those are the problems that you do run into. There are all kinds of people that say, well, you're not as good as so-and-so. Do you think I had an uncle that said, these are, your life photographers, and they're the best in the world. How do you think you're going to compete against them? It's not competing against them. You have to compete against yourself and do the best you can, which is what I've always tried to do, whether it was commercial work, sports work. Just try to make the best photograph that you know you can do. And the thing that I would say to them is, follow your own heart and mind, and do what you think you want to do as best you can, especially in the art world. Don't do what they tell you is now selling or won't sell. I think of what happened in the last 93. I think of what happened in the last 75 years, ever since I've been in photography, and more than that. Well, anyway, the point is that what people thought 75 years ago, everything has changed. And I would say that nobody ever knew that they'd have computers and technical data that could be used as well as they use it today. And I just spoke to one photographer friend who was having a tough time because he was brought up in the magazine business. And I said to him, if you really want to break out and really do something special, if I were starting again, I would make sure that I can handle a drone. I mean, the things that are opened up in your mind immediately, knowing how hard I once I once did golf courses for Sports Illustrated, and I must have spent weeks in a helicopter hanging out the window, you know, trying to do something different. And I did succeed. I decided to do something that other people didn't do. I photographed from a very low vantage point so that the three-dimensionality of this course, of the courses, the hills and the valleys and so, would really be seen, not from a much higher point. But getting back to going into being and doing drone work, I mean, it opens, it's just something that's so new that it's opened such a large door to being creative and doing something that nobody else has ever done. I think it's, you have to be, you just have to be true to yourself, Jack.
Yeah.
You know, and not really worry about what other people are really telling you or saying. And I think it's the biggest advice, it's the largest advice I can give any photographer, and especially in the art world. You know, commercial world is a little different. You know, you have to be able to actually accomplish what somebody else wants.
But not literally, but give them something exciting, I think.
If you can satisfy yourself, there's nobody better to do it.
Right.
you can't do more.
Anyway, right. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and it's been a pleasure, you know, like I said, I used to live in the same building as Marvin, and it was just, you know, a great, great experience getting to know him. Anyway, thank you so much for this, and I appreciate it. And is that book still available, the Passion Book?
Yes, it is. It's whatever's going to the internet, and the book is under my name. It's the title of the book is Marvin E. Newman, and it's under Tashin Publishers, and I think it's a snap if you want to buy it.
Well, but, I'm certainly buying it. What is the price range? What is the price range?
Okay, Jack. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Okay, thank you, Marvin E. Newman, famous photographer and good friend. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Jack.
All right. Bye.